Hello, I'm Fontone Quinlevin, CEO of Futura Health, welcoming you to Workforce RX, where I interview leaders and innovators for insights into creating a future-ready workforce. Many of our past podcast guests have overviewed existing workforce development programs with observations on what local, state, and national governments can do to build a better system. Today, we're going to shift the search for answers to perhaps a less obvious source of change in the field, venture capital. One leading player in the space is JFF Ventures, an impact fund that was spun out of the 40-year-old workforce development nonprofit Jobs for the Future. As we'll learn today from its managing partner, Sabri Raja, JFF Ventures works with early-stage companies which are developing tech-enabled approaches to creating equitable economic advancement. Thanks very much for joining us today, Sabri.
Thank you, Juan. I appreciate you having me.
Well, let's start by having you give us your take on traditional workforce training models, and what do you think we should be building instead?
The couple of things when we talk about traditional workforce training, right? It worked maybe in the last decade, but it's not working as well right now. First of all, I think there is a mismatch with employer needs. One, traditional programs are often focusing on credentials over skills. 70% of corporate leaders report like a critical skills gap. And a good percentage of jobs require digital skills, but one third of workers do not have foundational digital abilities. So my point is that we need skills, but we are training people with credentials. That's the number one thing. And second is many training pathways, they're too slow and too rigid, which doesn't really work for how people live and work. They sort of fail to accommodate the realities of adult learners, how they can balance work and life, especially when we're talking about underserved populations. There is a large frontline workforce that's really not sitting at a computer all day long. There's limited access and equity in this process. Everyone's not close to a brick and mortar location to go in to get the training needed. The schedules are mostly inflexible. If you think about individuals in low-income jobs, mainly a lot of single moms, caregivers. So there's so many different aspects that makes it inaccessible for a large swath of population. The last thing I'll say is, today, we're navigating sort of a generational crossroads in the workforce, right? On one end, we have Gen Z that's entering the workforce. Their expectations are to have flexibility. They want purpose. They want, and they do have digital fluency, but they often sort of lack exposure to traditional career pathways or work-based learning. On the other hand, we're seeing like an aging workforce that, you know, wants or needs to remain employed longer, but they are facing sort of age bias and skill mismatch, particularly now with all of the innovations and the new technology. So we have to take all of these things into account, right? So the traditional workforce system was really designed to funnel workers into corporate roles. But today, if you look at where people are working, a good percentage are one-person companies. I think like 41 million people are one-person owners. There are 33 million small businesses. We're talking about small businesses that are the backbones of communities, like doggy daycares and salons and HVAC. So this is like, it's a complicated mishmash of demographic shifts, the type of work that people are traditionally in. So the traditional training systems has really sort of focused on a very rigid model that doesn't work for how technology has shifted and how demographics are shifting.
And Sabri, what should we build instead or to complement what is in existence?
Yeah, I mean, complement is the right word, right? I mean, we are at an interesting time today where we are in the middle of a huge technological innovation, which really gives us the right foundation for how we can change these systems or complement the existing systems, right? So one is creating sort of personalized learning approaches, right? So I'll give you one example of a company that we've invested in. Manifest is the name of the company. The way they're looking at using AI as a business intelligent and a business companion for a small, medium business owner. Traditionally, if you look at an SMB owner, they are not really the type of person that these workforce trainings were made for. First, they can't really shut down their business to go get trained. So what I mean is, like, today's systems have to meet the worker where they are, and AI can enable that. And it has to be personalized and it has to be micro, right? So how do you personalize training, offer micro coaching, on the job upskilling, as opposed to education stands sort of outside of the job? That's one of the ideas.
So I'm going to shortly pull on some of the threads that you've laid out in terms of the training, and the system has to be personalized. It has to be micro. It has to allow for those who work in small business, very small business, to be able to access. Before we get to that, I'd love to know, Sabri, I mean, I'm sure our listeners are wondering, how did you come to be in this space at this moment in time?
That's an interesting question, Juan. It really was not pre-planned. My career journey has been somewhat interesting. My background, I grew up on a farm in South India, first-gen college student, didn't really have much social capital. But my parents actually put a lot of emphasis on education, which actually opened a lot of doors to many opportunities, right? So for me, growing up in India, I came here to the US to do my master's. That led me to my first job at Texas Instruments, happened to end up in a Fortune 1000 company. And it happened to be in education technology, which actually led me into many classrooms across the country, many rural school districts, underserved school districts. And I was somewhat shocked to see how we're like oceans apart in America, and still there were hundreds and thousands of students who actually faced similar barriers, or a lot more equity gaps existed here than I had actually anticipated. And my background is in computer science and then mainly engineering technology. And that's kind of how I ended up in this role. So I just happened to be at this crux of having the right technical background, being in classrooms, seeing all of the opportunity gaps, and connecting my own lived experience. It was a unique sort of a culmination of many things coming together, right? So that, you know, led me to actually leaving my job at Texas Instruments to start my company. I really had no idea what it meant to start a company. I was just driven by this passion and purpose to really use technology to bridge the gap, mainly between industry and education. Like, kids were learning in the classroom without any understanding of why they were learning what they were learning, how it can actually be applied to the real world. That was really the problem I set out to solve. And sort of all the stars aligned. I was in many rooms where all these were being discussed. How do we bridge the workforce pipeline gap? How do we prepare students for the future of work? How do we bring equity in this process? And technology wasn't playing a role in connecting the dots. And I felt like I had this unique perspective where I could connect all of it to my own lived experience. And that led me to leaving my job at Texas Instruments to start my company, Nepris, in 2014, which led me down this entrepreneurial journey of being an edtech founder. Never met a venture capital investor before, never knew how to actually put a pitch deck together. But I was so driven by the purpose of what I was building. Had the right technical background, ended up, you know, going through the process of raising venture capital to continue building and growing. And that's how I first actually came into meeting more impact investors in this space. So impact investors were far and few like 10 years back, but I was fortunate to meet the handful of them that were all very supportive for me in my journey. Ended up growing the company, got acquired in 2021. Along this journey, I met Yigal, who's my co-managing partner right now in the fund. And he had a vision that I did not even have for myself, which he asked me many years back that when I have my exit, I should come join him to build a fund. And, you know, we reconnected after my exit and I joined him in early 2023. To me, it was like, you know, I walked this journey as a founder. I was seeing other founders and I could put myself in their shoes, which gave me a very unique perspective. Having that sort of operator background and being an investor, really sort of leading with empathy, investing with empathy, but at the same time, knowing what it takes to build a scalable company that can be financially successful as well. So I felt like I had all the right elements, but Egal had the vision of actually having me join him in this journey to build a best-in-class fund that really supports founders like me, that's coming to the table with the lived experience, with the passion and purpose, but with the right technical skills to build a viable business.
Oh, that's so helpful for our listeners to understand how you came to this problem space with all your background and purpose and interests and experience. So Sabri, what's the role of employers in the work that you're doing?
Yeah, I know I talked a lot about solopreneurs and small, medium businesses, but, you know, let's not forget about the large corporations. More than half the workforce, even including the frontline workforce, is employed by these large enterprises. And employers today play a crucial role in understanding how to deal with sort of this changing demographic, how to address sort of these new pathways, whether it's skills-based hiring, talent acquisition, more importantly, talent retention. And most important of all is how do you really provide all the wraparound supports, the benefits, and the access they need in order to thrive at work. So one of the programs that we've launched with the partnership of JFF's employer mobilization team is what we call the Corporate Innovation Council. So we have over 20 corporate leaders in learning and development, benefits, HR. They've all come together, mainly from Fortune 2000 companies, because they want to know what's happening in the front lines of innovation. They want to be in the room with these early stage founders, understanding what they're building and how they can be supportive. This works for everybody, right? Because I've been a founder. To be in a room as a first-time entrepreneur with all these leaders, giving you feedback as you're on your quest to product market fit, or you're thinking about how should I think about business models. So employers from these large enterprises are very much in the middle of the work that we're doing. They're at the forefront, giving, you know, feedback to founders, working hand in hand. So part of my point is we are not looking at, you know, venture from our perspective as we're writing a check and moving on and hope that these companies do well. But really, we're building a movement, a community, an ecosystem, and involving every stakeholder to be part of this process from the get-go.
So for those that are maybe less familiar with impact investment, can you just give us the primer on what that means and how you're approaching it through your current platform of JFF Ventures?
You know, impact investments, to me, a venture fund is a venture fund. You know, at the end of the day, we're investing in companies and technologies that can scale, that can grow, that can be financially viable and return capital to investors. But when we say impact investments, at least from a JFF Ventures perspective, it means we are driving towards a particular outcome. There is a theory of change that we are very intentional about, right? For example, we put a lot of effort into being very clear about our thesis, like what are the kinds of companies we are investing in? Why are we investing in these companies? What do we actually hope to accomplish? And so our first lens when we look at every company should be very aligned to our thesis. For example, our thesis, as you mentioned earlier, Vaughn, is investing in solutions that support economic mobility for middle to low wage populations. Nearly 110 million people who earn less than $50,000 a year. And that's the population we are very much focused on. And this is not a small percentage of the workforce. This is over 45% of the workforce, right? So sometimes impact investing, people think it's concessionary, it's philanthropic. But in the last decade, it's evolved quite a bit where you're leading with purpose, you have a clear theory of change, you're driving towards outcomes for a particular population. But at the same time, that doesn't mean we are giving up on the growth and the scalability. We're investing in scalable companies that can sustain, grow, thrive, and return capital for all stakeholders.
So let me invite you one more time to repeat your thesis and then give us an example of an investment that you've made to make it real for our listeners.
Absolutely. So our thesis, our first lens when we look at any company is it moving the needle for the populations we care about, which is people making less than $50,000 a year? This is workers in low and middle income jobs. That is our core focus. And that can be in four different focus areas. One is, what are the skills they need? Once you have the skills, how do we give you access to quality jobs? So education, technology, access to quality jobs is workforce tech. Once you're in a job, how can employers support your upward mobility? That's HR tech. What tools does employers need? And then for this population that we're talking about, a lot of barriers to work actually is not necessarily at work. It's outside of work. Access to childcare, access to transportation, access to credit. So that's the wraparound supports, right? So that's sort of the fourth focus area. What do they need outside of work to thrive at work? So we're one of the only early stage funds that take a holistic view of the entire journey of the worker and invest along that journey. Education, jobs, career, mobility, and wraparound supports.
And so do you have an example of one in each that would help us get a feel?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll give you a few examples because we just started investing out of our new fund, which is JFF Ventures Economic Mobility Fund 1. Pace AI was our first investment out of this new fund. Pace is the first of its kind AI agent that is focused on the ESL learner, right? So if you look at upskilling and reskilling workers and bridging these opportunity gaps, the ESL learners, that's the immigrant population, the biggest barrier to economic advancement is language. So the founder, Victoria, again, the type of founders we support, founders with the lived experience, founder Victoria came to the table and she left her PhD at MIT to start this company, mainly because her father came to this country, had the right skill sets, but didn't have the language in order to land a proper job. He started his career as a dishwasher in the country. So she's very purpose-driven, has the right technical background. So Pace is a first-of-its-kind end-to-end AI agent that serves the ESL learner to fast-track English language acquisition, primarily for technical training and essential skills. Right? It's not a learn English from zero to one. You know English, but then how do you actually comprehend technical content, increase your reading level so you're able to qualify for courses, you're able to complete your courses with confidence. So this is a deep tech AI native platform that's sitting on top of existing curriculum and content. She's working with community colleges, working with GED, working with curriculum providers, and really unlocking a level of, you know, language access that did not exist before. Right. So it's a perfect example of a company, founders with the lived experience, building on native AI tools that's supporting a population that has often been overlooked and underserved, leading to real economic mobility and outcomes as far as education and access to jobs. Another one, you know, we talked a bit about solopreneurs. As we look at Gen Z, there's a lot more people that want to have autonomy. They want to be their own boss, the barrier to entry is much lower. But what's preventing people from actually going forward with that is because of lack of access to benefits. So Be Solo is the second company we invested in. Be Solo is an all-in-one solution for the self-employed solo professional, providing them end-to-end access to benefits, to help them maximize tax savings, to reduce the administrative burden with fully integrated financial and operational tools. So these are the kind of companies that we are looking at. Another one that was a recent investment is called Collegio. So Collegio is an all-in-one AI-powered college counseling platform that's connecting students with personalized guidance while also providing colleges with predictive, you know, student matches so that they can get the right students in the funnel. The first time I looked at Collegio, I thought, not another college counseling tool, right? Because honestly, in the last decade, there's been so many tools focused on bridging this gap in college counseling. But today, I'm a mom of two teenagers who went through this college admissions process. I just had my younger one graduate high school.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Ready to be an empty nester. But even as I was navigating this process, I was like, the only way to get personalized, high quality counseling is to pay thousands of dollars, which is not even accessible for the middle class sometimes. So what AI has afforded us right now is, if you are using it the right way and building the right tools like Collegio, it's really opening up an opportunity for every student, no matter who you are, where you're from, what your background is, what your family income is, to be able to get high quality personalized guidance without leaving your home. Mm. Democratizing access to quality college counseling, to everyone's surprise, hasn't been done at all very well till today. And Collegio has an opportunity to do that. So these are the type of companies we're investing in, thinking about these four focus areas: access to education, access to opportunities, access to jobs, what do they need outside of work, access to credit for non-traditional pathways. So these are the type of companies we are investing in.
Oh, that's very helpful for our understanding. And Sabri, where does your capital come from?
It's a great question, Vaughn. Actually, you know, we do run a pilot fund still under the nonprofit Jobs for Future. That had different sources of funding from various philanthropic investors. That was a catalytic fund. But this JFF Ventures Economic Mobility Fund One is our first institutional fund. We are raising capital from a lot of mission-aligned institutional investors. Many are foundations that have a focus and a purpose to bridge this sort of opportunity gap. They are focused on quality jobs. Luckily, you know, because of how thesis-driven we are, we do attract a lot of strategic institutional capital. Some of them are family offices who care about this work. For example, we have World Education Services is an investor. They care about this work because they're focused on the immigrant population, bridging the gap for immigrant communities. We have the SCAN Foundation that is focused on the aging population. How are we really thinking about this? I think 80 million people are going to be over 65 plus by 2040 in the workforce. So what are we doing to help support this population? So one of our investors, like the SCAN, is focused on that population. And then we have other funds, foundations, institutional investors, corporate institutional investors. Obviously, they care about the workforce, the talent pipeline, the skills-based approach to hiring. So a lot of different strategic entities, both from the corporate side, foundations, family offices, that have a specific focus on economic mobility for underrepresented communities, and those are our investors.
So is there, more broadly speaking, is there a growing trend where foundations who have tended to deploy grants, which is kind of money one way out, are many of them shifting dollars, or is there more interest in impact investing, which also brings money back in to replenish their supply of capital? What's your observation of the space?
Yeah, I definitely think impact investing as a category has much more stabilized in the last decade, and a lot more foundations are looking at deploying capital into for-profit funds that have an impact focus. This wasn't the case even, you know, maybe 5-6 years back. We're seeing a lot more foundations being able to do this. One of the reasons we're able to attract this capital is also many of them are wanting to learn from us in this process, right? Because we're not just a fund that's a standalone fund trying to do this on our own. We are building this on a deep ecosystem like Jobs for Future. So this is a community, it's an ecosystem. It's bringing all the right strategically aligned investors. It's bringing all the right founders. So everybody also want to learn from each other. So we have a number of foundations that are actually first time fund investors in the fund. That's a really good sign that it's evolving, but we could use a lot more foundations getting going in this direction. We're starting to also see a lot more traction and be the place that many of these foundations are coming to be a safe first-time investment and to learn from the community as well.
Well, we've learned so much about impact investing as a lever for getting the types of solutions we all want and how to deploy capital in a different way, not just in the form of grants or contracts. One, I wanted to open the floor and make sure that are there any additional points that you wanted to make to our audience, and then invite you to close by giving us what makes you excited about the future of work.
Wow. You know, one thing is we're solving real systemic problems like education gaps, financial inclusion, workforce inequity. These actually creates like massive, often untapped markets, right? Early stage impact ventures can really outperform because we are addressing sort of urgent, sticky demand with a loyal user base. So we have an opportunity to really sort of level the playing field at a time where technology is completely reshaping the future of work. I feel sort of privileged to be in this part where we're seeing amazing innovations, amazing founders who have the lived experience, but need the right kind of investor to support them to take this from idea to growth. And what is most exciting to me, because I've walked this founder journey before, is that just deploying capital is not enough, especially if you're an early stage investor in the space. Being able to do this on top of a 40-year-old ecosystem like Jobs for Future that has deep connections in education, workforce, policy, research. This is a community that we are building. And that's what I'm most excited about, not just being able to find the right companies and invest in them, but to be able to support them with the right kind of support at the right time to help them scale and to reach many more of the workers that are often left behind.
Well, I'm certainly wishing you, all of your entrepreneurs and your solopreneurs, all the best as you're working hard to provide solutions that help us with and aid us in economic mobility. With that, thank you very much, Sabri, for joining us today.
Thank you, Juan. I appreciate you having me.
I'm Vantone Quinlevin with Futura Health. Thanks for checking out this episode of Workforce RX. I hope you will join us again as we continue to explore how to create a future-focused workforce in America.